Good morning. The lesson today is from Hebrews, chapter 1, verses 1 to 4, and also chapter 2, 5 to 12, and 14 to 18. Long ago, at many times and in many ways, God spoke to our ancestors by the prophets. But these last days he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed the heir of all things, through whom also he created the world. He is the radiance of the glory of God and the exact imprint of his nature, and he upholds the universe by the word of his power. After making purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the Majesty on high, having become as much superior to angels as the name he has inherited is more excellent than theirs. For it was not to angels that God subjected the world to come, of which we are speaking. It has been testified somewhere, "What are humans that you are mindful of them, or mortals that you care for them? You made them for a little while lower than the angels, and you have crowned them with glory and honor, putting everything in subjection under their feet." Now, putting everything in subjection to them, God left nothing outside of their control. At present, we do not yet see everything in subjection to them, but we see him who for a little while was made lower than the angels, namely Jesus, crowned with glory and honor because of the suffering of death, so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. For it was fitting that he, for whom and by whom all things exist, in bringing many to glory, should make the founder of their salvation perfect through suffering. For he who sanctifies and those who are sanctified all have one source. That is why he is not ashamed to call them brothers and sisters, saying, "I will tell of your name to my brothers and sisters. In the midst of the congregation, I will sing your praise." Since, therefore, the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise partook of the same things, that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is, the devil, and deliver all those who through fear of death were subject to lifelong slavery. For surely it's not angels that he helps, but he helps the offspring of Abraham. Therefore, he had to be made like his brothers and sisters in every respect, so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in the service of God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For because he himself has suffered when tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
We stand for our gospel reading.
The Lord be with you.
And also with you.
The Holy Gospel is written in the 17th chapter of the Gospel according to St. Matthew, beginning at the first verse. Glory be to you, O Christ. And after 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John his brother, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became white as light. And behold, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah, talking with him. And Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good that we are here. If you wish, I will make 3 tents here, one for you, and one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He was still speaking when, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell on their faces and were terrified. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Rise and have no fear." And when they lifted up their eyes, they saw no one but Jesus only. The Gospel of Christ. Praise be to you, O Christ.
So remain standing. I'll invite you to bow your heads in a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you for your word. through which you speak and reveal yourself to us. And I would pray in light of that truth then that I as preacher would just get out of the way. Far, far less of me. Far, far more of you. That your people gathered this day would be edified and your son Jesus glorified. For we ask it in his name. Amen. Would you be seated, please? Do you see what you have in Jesus? In the early 1990s, a woman from West London was browsing a boot sale, similar to our garage sales, where people sell things that are unwanted around their house out of their garage. In England, they sell them out of their boots or their trunk of their car. And as she was browsing, she had her eyes caught by a piece of jewelry. In her mind, costume jewelry, with a gaudy, large cubic zirconia set in an inelegant silver clasp. She picked it up for about $15. And for the next 30 years, she wore it every single day, doing housework with it, never insured it, never questioned it. And then her mother became quite ill. They needed money to provide care, and so she looked at everything in her life that could be liquidated, and she found that ring, she took it into a jeweler, and the jeweler began to turn it in the light with his glass, and suddenly he became very quiet. "This is real," he said. It turned out it was a 26-carat diamond. Its sale cared for her mother very, very well. If the original owner had known what they had, they never would have sold it for a pittance out of their trunk. Do you see what you have in Jesus? We're currently in the season of Epiphany, a season in the church year that is historically turned over to beholding Jesus. Who is the child born in Bethlehem? And so up until Holy Week, we'll be examining the book of Hebrews, a book which by the Spirit turns Jesus in the light so that we might behold him in all of his glory. Now, we have no idea who wrote Hebrews, save that they were known to the apostles. And while it bears the marks of a letter, the author themselves calls it a word of exhortation, a sermon. A sermon that was more than likely written to urban Jewish Christians who were navigating the complexity of pluralistic society. Now, their coming to Jesus had been very costly. They'd been ostracized by family, and coming out from under the Roman imperial protections for adherence to Judaism, they'd faced persecution, the seizure of property. They'd weathered that season well, with joy even, but now persecution is once more on the horizon. And many were facing the temptation to walk away, to return to their Jewish roots, to return to that Roman imperial protection, to return to religious ritual. And the author is writing to implore them, see what you have in Jesus. For if you saw what you have in Jesus, you would never, ever, ever want to let him go. Now, we've bitten off more than we can chew by looking at the first two chapters today, but they are meant to be held together. Chapter 1 beholds who Jesus is. Chapter 2, why that matters to us. And together they reveal Jesus as fully God and fully human. And to behold the glory of that reality will be like drinking water from a fire hose. But that's kind of the point. We'll have time as we go through the series to linger on some of these truths. But in these first few chapters, we're being invited to behold, to worship, to stand in awe. Hebrews is written in the most elegant Greek in all the New Testament. The author has laid down their gifts to glorify Jesus, to rivet our attention on him. The first four verses are one sentence in Greek. And what a sentence it is. Long ago, at many times and in many ways, God spoke. Meaning, God spoke in piecemeal, progressively by way of the prophets, but now in these last days, he has spoken to us fully and finally in a Son. We are dealing with a God who speaks. A God who desires to be known. A God who desires relationship with you, with me. At the last church I served, a couple began to attend. The husband, we'll call him Bob, was on a quest for a truth. He was a lapsed Catholic, angry at the church, at organized religion, and he was exploring every faith system that was on offer in the city of Toronto, dragging his wife along for the ride. He joined a small group that I was leading on Sunday afternoon, and it was often a struggle to navigate his angry intensity. But he was hungry, and he would gobble up everything that was on offer. When I first arrived at Little T, he came for a few Sundays, and then for a long time, I didn't see him. Then I got up one Sunday to preach, and there he was, about halfway back on the left, gaunt, bald, a noticeable concave in his skull. After the service, he said, "I have something to share with you, Tim." And he invited me to his home for drinks in his garden. There he shared with me what the last few years had held for him. A brain cancer diagnosis, a medically induced coma. But in that coma, Jesus had met him, spoke with him. "I finally found what I'm looking for," he said. "And it's all about relationship. It's all about relationship." "Yes, it is, Bob. Yes, it is." The angry intensity was gone. In its place, humility, kindness, warmth, rest. We are dealing with a God who speaks to us fully and finally in Jesus, desiring to be known, desiring relationship with you, with me. See what you have in Jesus. The first sentence continues in verse 2 with seven claims as to who Jesus is. First, he is the heir of all things, meaning everything belongs to Jesus. The stars are his, the planets are his, the earth is his, the nations are his, you are his, I am his. There is nothing, no one to whom Jesus does not say lovingly, "You are mine." Do you see what you have in Jesus? Through whom he created the world, verse 2. All of this was made for Jesus and by Jesus. Meaning everything works best when done in the way of Jesus. Your life works best when done in the way of Jesus. Your relationships work best when done in the way of Jesus. Our society works best when done in the way of Jesus. Not because Jesus teaches us a better technique, but because it was through him that all of life came into being. This is who he is. Do you see him? He is the radiance of the glory of God, verse 3. The only way that you and I perceive the sun is by way of the rays that reach the earth. The only way that you and I will perceive the living God is by way of Jesus. For he is the radiance of the glory of God. See what you have in Jesus. He is the exact imprint of his nature, verse 3. That word imprint is the Greek word for character. It referenced a die, a tool by which an impression was made in metal, like the head of the emperor on a coin. Jesus is the exact imprint of the character of God. When we look at Jesus, we see exactly what God is like. Do you see? See what you have in Jesus. He upholds the universe by a word of his power, verse 3. Jesus keeps the sun's burning, the planets turning, the grass growing, your heart beating. Jesus' words keep all of life together. See what you have in Jesus. After making purification for sins, verse 3, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. Meaning Jesus has fully dealt with sin. The priests in the temple would stand offering sacrifices over and over again because sin could not be dealt with fully and finally in that way. But when Jesus offers his life on a cross for us, he sits down. Why? Because it's done. Complete. It's finished. Your past has been dealt with. Sin's power has lost its grip on you. Do you see? Having become as much superior to the angels, verse 4. Angels were seen as mediators, carrying God's message to humanity and our messages, our prayers to God. But Jesus, who is fully God, can fully represent God to us, and as fully man, can represent our humanity to God. And chapter 2 will tell us why that's so important. See what you have in Jesus. And that's only the first sentence. For this Jesus, who is fully God, has become fully man. Born in a manger in Bethlehem. But why? For what purpose? Chapter 2 opens with a quotation from Psalm 8. The psalmist is looking up into the heavens, beholding the glory of the night sky, the stars and the galaxies and the wonders. And he's bowled over by the thought. What are humans that you are mindful of us? Mortals, that you care for us. For you have made us little lower than the angels. In the original Hebrew, it's little lower than God. And you have crowned us with glory and honor and put everything in subjection under our feet. The psalm is about us. Humanity. Made little lower than God. Made to rule in God's stead by reflecting his goodness and nature out into the world to bring life and flourishing so that all might experience his love, peace, justice, and goodness. And then the author of Hebrews says, verse 8, but we don't see that now, do we? No, we don't. Right? A truth that we are sadly all too aware of. And Hebrews doesn't rush past this. So let us acknowledge the truth. Every time we hear the impact of missile strikes and shootings, every time a doctor turns to us and says, I'm sorry, there's nothing more I can do. Every time disease ravages a community, every time a woman's body is exploited on the internet, every time we suffer the pain of a broken relationship, every time a leader wields power for their own sake, every time we're reminded we are not stewarding God's good creation for the life and flourishing of all. But, verse 9, there is one who did. We see in Jesus the only true human, one who truly reflects the goodness and character of God and brings life and flourishing to all. And he is the one who truly fulfills this psalm. And in him we will too. Really? Yes. Verse 10, he will bring many to glory. Oh, I know what that's about. That's about Jesus bringing us to heaven when we die. No, it's not. glory has already been defined by Psalm 8, the glory of our reflecting the goodness and character of God and bringing life and flourishing, participating in a new creation that will go on forever. This is the glory. As Daryl Johnson puts it, in Jesus, God becomes what he wants us to be, so that in him, we can become what he wants us to be. See what you have in Jesus. But how will he do that? He becomes, verse 10, the founder of our salvation, the pioneer, the one who blazes the trail through the unknown so that others might follow. Perhaps we might consider a passenger boat that has been wrecked upon rocks. All the surviving passengers must get safely to shore. One brave soul grabs a length of rope, ties one to the one side to the railing, and then dives into the rock-infested waters, and safely navigates their way to shore, ties it off, and others might follow. He is the founder, the pioneer of our salvation, blazing the trail to a new humanity. But this doesn't fully capture the meaning of the word. For the commentator William Lane puts it, to be founder is not just to be a pioneer, but to be our champion, one who represents us in battle. In the ancient world, when two armies would meet on the battlefield, often the outcome was decided by each side sending out a champion, as was in the case of David and Goliath. Each side, nation's future would rise or fall on the back of that one. Their defeat would be a representative defeat. Their victory, a representative victory. Jesus has become our champion. His victory is a representative victory. By his death and resurrection, death has been defeated. The one who held the power of death, verse 14, the devil, has been vanquished. He can no longer wield fear of death to enslave us. Just think of it. We are immersed in a secular worldview, a worldview that lives in the shadow of death. For it says, this life is all that there is. And so I've got to fill this life with as many beautiful things, experiences, and pleasures as I possibly can. It drives our frenetic consumption, undermines relationships, and undergirds selfishness. Just think, if the shadow of death were lifted, the fear of death removed. Oh, but it has been removed in Jesus. For in Jesus there is new creation. In Jesus, death has been brought down to death. In Jesus, there is life everlasting. See what you have in Jesus. But how? How will I live into this new humanity given me in Jesus? It's beyond my abilities. It is indeed. But this Jesus has become like us in every way, verse 17, so that as our faithful and merciful high priest, he can help us in every way. You see, Jesus has faced every single thing that we have faced. Are you struggling with greed, lust, anger, bitterness, unforgiveness, envy, jealousy? Jesus has as well, and pressed through it to victory. He can meet us, not in judgment, but in grace. Call upon him. He's there to help. Jesus has faced every pain and sorrow known to our humanity. Are you struggling with betrayal, rejection, failure, misrepresentation, grief, sorrow? Jesus has as well. He's there to help with loving compassion. Call on his name. see what you have in Jesus. For under the pressure, the suffering, the wear and tear of ordinary life, there's always the tendency to treat as ordinary what is anything but. In Hebrews, the Spirit takes Jesus, turns him into the light, and says, this is real. This isn't costume jewelry. This is glory. This is God bound up with our humanity. Your sin forgiven, your fear of death removed, your healing underway, your future secure. And once you see it, really see it, you worship. You become obsessed. You hold fast. And you become more and more like Jesus because you see him as he is. And so in the season of Epiphany, guided by the voice of the preacher to the Hebrews, let us see what we have in Jesus. Amen.
You've just listened to a podcast from Little Trinity Church in Toronto. Please check out our website at www.littletrinity.org to find out more about our ministries and services.